everyone, and welcome back. I'm the chair for Workforce and Business Development, Finance and Policy. I just wanted to welcome you back again, Chair. I would like to call this meeting of the Committee of Workforce and Business Development, Finance and Policy to order. Members, as customary, as we come back, I just wanted to remind everyone to please mute your mics. This remote hearing is conducted pursuant to Rule 10.01. This remote hearing can be viewed at the House television webcast. I would like to invite now a new legislative assistant, Committee Legislative Assistant Abdihamid Badri, to now take the role.
Chair Noor.
Present.
Chair Noor present. Vice Chair Zhang.
Here.
Vice Chair Zhang present. Lead Hamilton.
Present.
Lead Hamilton present. Baker.
Baker present.
Baker present. Dabney.
Dabney present.
Dabney present. Frankie. Frankie. Greenman.
Frankie is excused for now. He'll be joining us later.
Thank you. Greenman?
Present.
Greenman present. Haley?
Haley present.
Haley present. Juergens is excused. Cagle?
Present.
Cagle present. Katiza Watun?
Present.
Katiza Watun present. Olson?
Present.
Olson present. Tujong?
Present.
Tujong present. Chair, we have a quorum.
There's a quorum present. With that, Vice Chair Zhe Zhong, will you entertain a motion? I'll entertain a motion from you to approve the minutes for April 9, 2021.
So move, Mr. Chair.
Vice Chair Zhe Zhong moves the approval of the minutes for April 9, 2021. Here, any discussion on the minutes for April 9, 2021? Hearing none, those in favor, please say aye.
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 Those opposed? See none, the motion prevails and minutes for April 9, 2021 approved. Members, as you can see, we do have new faces, new individuals who have joined us as part of the Workforce and Business Development Committee. I'd like to start with I see Nick, who is going to be transitioning in as the CA while Travis takes the paternity leave. So, Nick, please welcome and introduce yourself to the committee.
Hi, nice to meet everyone virtually here. My name is Nick Stumelanger, and I will be shadowing Travis here until he leaves in March. And I'm excited to have some big shoes to fill. And wonderful to meet you all.
We also have a new CLA. Our CLA is now former CLA, Mr. Jason Chavez, is a city council in Minneapolis. We wish him the best in his new role. Our new CLA is Abdihamid Badri. Abdihamid, if you can introduce yourself to the committee, please.
Yeah, good afternoon, members of the Workforce Committee. My name is Abdihamid, and I will be the CLA for this committee and also the LA for Representative Herr.
Thank you so much. We also have a new Republican research. So I'd like to invite Amy to introduce herself to the committee.
Hi, everyone. Amy Zipko, GOP Research.
Welcome aboard. And finally, we have a new fiscal nonpartisan staff. Ashley, please say hello to the committee if you're with us.
Mr. Chair, it's possible I did not get her the Zoom link, and so I just rapidly sent it to her. She should be joining us very quickly. First week rust, so I apologize and apologize to the new staff and to the members. So maybe my paternity leave can't start soon enough. Oh, here she comes. No. I'll let her in.
All right, no problem. We will catch up with her. So this is just the first meeting. This is not going to be a heavy lifting for the day, but we have got a heavy discussion to talk about. We are discussing today the issues that you've been hearing back and forth, and also the recent reports about workforce shortages. To me, I don't see this as a workforce challenge. I don't see this as a workforce shortage. We see it as a challenge. It's a challenge to all of us. You know, as a parent, I see the struggle. I've seen the struggles that we see in our schools. I believe Chair Devney can tell you a lot of discussions about challenges that we're facing in our school systems. We see it across the hospitality industry. We see it across many areas. And yet we see opportunity. Now, those are discussions that we need to have. Our objective here is to come up with a comprehensive workforce package that really addresses the core of the issues. We have got pandemic, we've got childcare challenges, we've got opportunities for people resigning for low income jobs, looking for better opportunities. We need to figure out how we can skill folks, reskill them, upskill them, and give them that opportunity that they're seeking, at the same time knowing that this is a moment for workers because this the market is ready for them. We've seen many people who left completely the labor force. And all those discussions, we would like to invite the department. I see the Commissioner Grove is here with us. I just wanted to welcome him back to the regular sessions of committee hearings. And please take over, Commissioner Grove.
Well, thank you, Chair Noor and members. It's good to see you all. Happy New Year. It doesn't seem like that long ago that we were convened together here as a group trying to navigate a really unique and challenging moment for our economy, but also one that has a ton of opportunity. And so it's our honor to come here today and engage with you all as we kick off this session. We enter this session with a lot of optimism and confidence that we can work together to do exactly what Chair Noor just said, to come together and build a package that will help our workers and help our businesses navigate this moment and put Minnesota on the front edge of our economy nationally and internationally in the coming years. It's a huge challenge and a huge opportunity. So we're excited to be here. We're going to, I think, take some time to talk you through a little bit of the state of our economy today. We'll hear from a couple of our economists here in a moment. And then the chair has asked us at the agency to walk through sort of what's been happening since last April when we last convened and give sort of an update of where things are and how we have done the work of bringing to life so many of the ideas and programs and policies that you put forward this last session. So we're excited to do that. I think we'll start by a look at our economy, and to do that, I want to turn to our experts. We are pleased today to be joined by a new research director at DEED, a new head of our Labor Market Information Office, Angelina Nguyen. Angelina is a great new leader at our agency. She comes to us from the Department of Labor and Industry, and she has also spent time at the Council of Asian Pacific Minnesotans as well, has a master's and bachelor's from the University of Minnesota. She just started last week, so she is fresh on the job. Comes to us with a lot of energy and insight. So I wanted Angelina to have a chance to say hello here, if that's okay, Mr. Chair, to introduce herself to the committee, and then we'll dive into the presentation from her team.
Welcome, Ms. Nguyen. Please introduce yourself to the committee and proceed.
Yes, thank you, Commissioner. Thank you, Representative Noor. Hi, everyone. My name is Angelina Nguyen, and as Commissioner Grove shared, I've been with the state of Minnesota for about 10 years. Started with the Council on Asian Pacific Minnesotans and work with DHS and then with Labor and Industry, and now I'm with DEED. Very happy to be here and very excited to work with all of you.
Commissioner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We want Angelina a chance to introduce herself, but again, given it's her second week, we'll turn to her team to kind of lead the presentation for today on Minnesota's economic position, our forecast. And so with that, Mr. Chair, we'd love to welcome back Orianne Casal, who has been a great leader of DEED for some time on labor market information front, to kind of walk through a snapshot of where Minnesota is and where we think we're headed. And so if that's okay with you, Mr. Chair, I'd welcome Orianne to come forward for the first piece of our presentation.
Welcome. Please introduce yourself to the committee and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Noor and members of the committee. Thanks for the opportunity to present. I am going to share my slide deck here. And hopefully everyone can see that. And let me just, sorry, oh, can't do that, okay. I also wanted to mention that I won't be able to check the chat during my presentation. So if there are urgent questions, you're more than welcome to stop me, and I'm happy to answer them. That doesn't look like it's displaying very well. Let me just try to figure out what's going on here. I'm not seeing.
It's displaying well on our side.
Is it yes. displaying fully? Okay, good. Okay, there. Now I can see that. Okay.
Not on our side now. So please share again.
Oh, sorry about that. Okay. Hopefully that is now working. And I'm sorry, but I still need to do some rearranging here. Okay. So Minnesota's unemployment rate fell to 3.1% in December, while the number of jobs dropped by 2,000. This is the first month-over-month decline during 2021. This unemployment rate puts us 14th lowest compared to other states. The unemployment rate is now as low as it was at any time during 2019. That, combined with the fact that the labor force participation rate at 67.7% made no progress in 2021, and the size of the labor force is still down by 87,000 workers since February 2020, means that we're looking at a very tight labor market going into 2022. At the same time, we've seen strong job growth. At 2,887,400 jobs, we're about 109,000 jobs short of where we were in February 2020 prior to the pandemic, and 88,000 jobs short in the private sector. So we still have a way to go, but we've added 168,000 jobs over the year for a growth rate of 6.2%. This puts us in fifth place for fastest job growth nationwide. This graph adds together the unemployment rate and the change in the labor force participation rate from prior to the pandemic, or February 2020. This represents the total share of workers over this period who are either actively seeking work or who would have been expected to be working or looking for work if it wasn't for the impact of the pandemic. These adjusted unemployment rates are calculated from 12-month moving average data. So in fact, the December number is an average for the year of 2021. In December, the unemployment rate for Black workers in Minnesota rose to 6.2%, while the labor force participation rate dropped slightly to 66.4%. The unemployment rate for Hispanic workers rose to 4.7%, with labor force participation well above where it was prior to the pandemic, thus the blue bars below the zero mark there. And it's now at 70, so their labor force participation is now at 78.3%. The unemployment rate for white workers ticked down to 3.6% in December, while the labor force participation rate ticked up to 68.1%. This graph looks at the jobs recovery since the end of the COVID-19 recession. The blue bars represent percent change in jobs during the recessionary months, February to April 2020. The green bars represent the progress that has been made in regaining those jobs through December 2021. As I mentioned, we're 109,000 jobs short of where we were prior to the pandemic and 88,000 jobs short in the private sector. The three hardest hit industries during the pandemic period were during the pandemic recession period were arts, entertainment, and recreation, with a 60% decline in jobs, accommodation and food services with a 52% decline, and other services with a 32% decline. Since then, construction, professional scientific and technical services, local government, private education services, and transportation, warehousing, and utilities are all above pre-pandemic levels of employment. Accommodations and food services and retail trade have both regained 86% of the jobs they lost, while manufacturing has regained 85%, arts, entertainment, and recreation has regained 84%, and other services has regained 79%. Arts, entertainment, and recreation lost 1,600 jobs in December, and manufacturing lost 900 jobs, but these industries have seen fairly steady job growth in 2021. Accommodations and food services experienced steady job growth throughout the year. Information, financial activities, mining and logging, and state and federal government continue to lose jobs over this period. Healthcare and social assistance has recovered only 43% of the jobs lost during early 2020. This slow growth is being driven by the seeming inability of the nursing and residential care industry to find and retain staff. Compared to December 2019, so over the 2 years, nursing and residential care has lost 9,200 jobs. This graph is from research our office has done on the impact of the pandemic recession on firms by size. As you can see, although the very large firms lost the most jobs, proportionately, it was the medium-sized firms, or the blue area here shows the proportional loss in jobs. The medium-sized firms were hit the hardest, with 24% of their jobs evaporating during second quarter 2020. We plan to update this research with results 1 year out, so for second quarter 2021, to see which size classes have struggled the most to recover. There is no doubt that employers, particularly in low-wage industries, are struggling to hire and retain staff. They have a number of tools they can use to address this, including better scheduling and more hours, hiring bonuses, better employee benefits, and increased wages. We track hourly earnings and hours worked on a monthly basis. The graph displays hourly earnings over a two-year period along with the consumer price index. In December, earnings were up 9.8% since 2019 in Minnesota, so that's for all workers, compared to all private sector workers, I should say, compared to 9.7% nationally. But inflation was up 8.5% over the same period. So while there were substantial wage gains for workers, they were mitigated by the high inflation. Earnings are growing substantially faster in some industries, especially low-wage, high-demand industries. In Minnesota, hourly earnings are up 20.4% over the year in December for food service and drinking places to $17.24 an hour for, and that's specifically for the non-supervisory, non-managerial workers, so what we call production workers, so that PW on the graph. Prior to 2021, average hourly earnings in this industry never cracked $15 an hour. In nursing and residential care facilities, wages are up 12.4% over the year to $21.13 an hour on average in December. This is a sharp turnaround for the industry, which saw falling wages over the year through the first half of 2021. Hours worked have made less progress, although they are rising in low-wage industries. Overall, hours worked were down 1.7% in December over the year and up only 0.6% over 2 years. In food service and drinking places, hours worked are up 8.8% over the year and 4% over 2 years. The problem is that even with these increases in the average in December, the December average was only 21 hours per week in the food service and drinking places industry. So it's a It's an industry that relies on part-time workers. Nursing and residential care facilities are also showing more hours worked, up 4.7% over the year and 8.7% over 2 years. In December, the average work week was 31.3 hours in the nursing and residential care facilities industry. Involuntary part-time, also known as part-time for economic reasons, so people who want to be working full-time but can't find full-time work, or who have had their typically full-time hours reduced to part-time, fell again in December by 500 people on a 12-month moving average basis to 34,900. Prior to the pandemic, we'd have to go back to the year 2002 to find a lower number. This indicates that employers are utilizing their workforces more efficiently, but also probably shows how difficult it is to staff part-time positions. In this labor market, workers have more choice than they typically do to choose work schedules that fit their needs. So what is behind these workforce shortages that we're experiencing, and how long will they last? As I mentioned, the state's labor force is down 87,000 workers, or 2.8% from February 2020, prior to the pandemic, while the U.S. labor force is down 1.4%. Instead of these decreases, we had expected to see labor force growth of 5,500 per year over the 2 years, 2020 and 2021. So that's the red line in the graph. This means that without the pandemic, Minnesota's labor force was projected to grow to roughly 3,127,000 workers, rather than where it is now at 3,030,000 workers, a difference of 97,000 workers, as the graph shows. Looking at longer-term trends in the size of the labor force, this projected growth of 5,500 per year during the period of 2020 to 2025 is down from 20,000 actual growth per year between 2015 and 2020, a result of the aging population. So the flatness of the red line in the graph underscores that Minnesota, just like in many states, would have been dealing with minimal labor force growth this decade, pandemic or no pandemic, leading to continued tight labor markets. But we did have a pandemic, and that has had a big impact on the labor force. National analysis indicates that over two-thirds of the decrease in the size of the U.S. labor force — we don't have this data as updated for Minnesota, so we can't look at the 2020 and 2021 retirement, or this information by age for Minnesota. But in terms of the U.S., two-thirds of the decrease in the size of the U.S. labor force since February 2020 was among workers age 55 and over, while the other one-third was among prime working age people age 20 to 55. Labor force exits of the older group was driven by natural and accelerated retirements, meaning that this group is unlikely to return in great numbers to the labor force. On the other hand, the vast majority of workers age 22 to 55, that prime working age group, report that they do plan to re-enter the labor force. The problem is that the older group represented two-thirds of the decrease, while the younger group represented only one-third of the decrease. Nationally, the rate of retirements has been increasing slowly as the workforce ages, but in 2020, the rate jumped up and was also elevated in 2021. Applying that increase to Minnesota's labor force and age distributions, between 29,000 and 59,000 more workers retired in the last 2 years than we would have expected without the pandemic. Even at the lower end of this range, the 29,000 retirements is a substantial portion of the 97,000 workers who have dropped out of the state's labor force since February 2020. We probably won't see a large portion of that group re-entering the labor force. We update our one-year employment forecast quarterly as more current data becomes available. For the third quarter 2021 to 2022, we're projecting 2.1% growth over the year for an addition of 61,900 jobs. While job growth continues to slow, we will likely reach our pre-pandemic employment level late this year. Slow labor force growth combined with low unemployment will continue to be a constraint on future job growth near and long term. So moving to job vacancies, Minnesota employers posted a record high 205,700 job vacancies in the second quarter of 2021, as the graph on the left shows. Looking at the graph on the right, from 2017 to 2019, the state had fewer than one available job seeker for each vacancy as hiring demand outpaced labor force growth. The pandemic recession briefly reversed this trend as unemployment spiked and employers paused hiring activity in second quarter 2020. By second quarter 2021, the balance had switched again, with more than 205,000 vacancies and fewer than 125,000 unemployed workers, or nearly twice as many open positions as available job seekers in Minnesota. This unprecedented spike in postings translates into a vacancy rate of 8%, or 8 job openings per 100 filled jobs. This is the highest on record going back to 2001. Looking at the industry sectors with the most vacancies, healthcare and social assistance posted nearly 40,000 vacancies in the second quarter of 2021, or nearly one in every five vacancies statewide. Accommodations and food services had the highest job vacancy rate of any industry at 20.2%. The next highest was arts, entertainment, and recreation, which had a vacancy rate of 16.5%, but this is a much smaller industry and translates into fewer openings. Retail trade did not experience the large decline in demand in 2020 that other industries saw, but still had a substantial increase in the number of vacancies compared to a year ago. Transportation and warehousing openings were up 379% over the year as bus and air transportation bounced back and the demand for delivery services continued to rise. Other services, which includes hair and nail salons, auto repair and maintenance, and civic and social organizations, posted 6,340 vacancies in the second quarter of 2020, a record high number. This is a list of the top 20 occupations in demand. We generate this list from a combination of the job vacancy survey results, size of the occupation, and also how many unemployed people are in those occupations, because we don't want to overrepresent the demand if there are a lot of people who are looking to get back into those occupations. These occupations represent 30% of them. So this list of the top 20 occupations in demand represents 30% of employment in the state. So they are, for the most part, very large. There are, for example, over 100,000 home health and personal care aides in Minnesota, not including many of the self-employed in this occupation. On this top 20 list, you'll find 4 healthcare-related occupations, 3 food prep and serving-related occupations, and 3 transportation and warehousing-related occupations. Also, looking at the list, all but 2 of these top 20 occupations require no more than a high school diploma or equivalent, with most also requiring short-term on-the-job training. RN and LPN are the 2 exceptions. 4 of these occupations, those with the stars next to them, pay wages that don't meet the basic cost of living for a single person without children in Minnesota, even at 40 hours a week. Those wages, along with part-time hours and irregular work schedules, makes it especially difficult for employers to recruit and retain staff in some of the highest demand occupations in the state. So my final set of slides is from reemployment research that we've been conducting. This is our second round. We have an article on our website in Minnesota Economic Trends in the June issue that looks at the period from the start of the recession in March 2020 through August 2020, so just that first 6 months of the pandemic. And this research updates that to look at results for those workers in the second quarter of 2021. So the research looks at the 631,000 Minnesotans, or which represents 25% of the state's labor force, who requested UI, unemployment insurance, between March and June 2020. We published, the slides that I'm presenting here update that research. As the table shows, 77% of workers who were receiving UI during second quarter 2020 were reemployed during second quarter 2021. 13% were not working in spring 2021 and were requesting UI benefits. And 11% were neither working in a UI covered job nor requesting UI benefits. Of the group that was employed, those who returned to their previous employer, that top line, saw the lowest wage loss in second quarter 2021 compared to second quarter 2020. Wage losses were greatest in the groups that did not return to the employer from which they were laid off. Changing employers or even going back to a second job came with a wage loss of about $366 in second quarter 2021 compared to the quarter prior to layoff. And of those who switched employers, that third line, changed employers, 25% saw a wage loss of 10% or more. Overall, 16% of workers who were working in second quarter 2021 had seen a 10% or more drop in their hourly wage. 13% of the 631,000 UI recipients period of March to June 2020 were not working and were not requesting UI benefits during second quarter 2021. Some of these workers did have spells of employment during the year, but during the period that we're studying, that second quarter 2021, they were not working. And finally, 11% of the total were no longer either working in a UI-covered job, nor were they requesting UI benefits during second quarter 2021. So we draw our data, we look at data from, it's basically administrative wage records data from the unemployment insurance program. So we are tracking workers. We can only track workers who work in UI-covered jobs in Minnesota, and that represents about 95% of employment in the state. So the next set of graphs break down the 631,000 UI recipients in the previous table by various characteristics. The first graph shows that part-time and or seasonal workers and low-wage workers were least likely to return to their previous job and most likely to be out of the workforce during second quarter 2021. Conversely, full-time year-round workers and those earning over $21.49 an hour were most likely to return to their jobs, their job previous to layoff, and most likely to be working. The second graph shows that the higher a worker's educational attainment, the more likely they were to return to their previous employer, and the less likely they were to be requesting UI during second quarter 2021. I I do want to point out that many in the less than high school category at the top there were still in high school in spring 2020. And by the end of the study period, they were likely to, you know, have already graduated. But they were, this top group disproportionately represents younger workers. Breaking the data down by age shows that the youngest and oldest age groups were most likely to be not working and not requesting UI in spring 2021. This supports the argument that there were a substantial number of retirements among workers 55 and older during the pandemic period. The youngest workers, on the other hand, were less likely to have jobs that could return, that they could return to after layoff. These workers likely left the labor force to pursue educational opportunities or care for children who were stuck at home, but most will likely return to employment in the near future. Since these workers are also the most likely to change careers and jobs, some may have left Minnesota for jobs elsewhere or to pursue self-employment opportunities. And then the mid-career workers were most likely to return to their previous employer and the most likely to be working during spring 2021. The graph on the right breaks down the group by race and ethnicity. By race, Black and mixed race workers were least likely to return to their previous employer and most likely to return to a second job or an employer with whom they had a previous working, who they had previously worked for. That's the green bar, but not their main employer at the time of layoff. White, Asian, and American Indian workers were most likely to return to the job from which they were laid off. Asian, Hispanic, and white workers were most likely to be employed in second quarter 2021. And those are all the slides I have. And I'm happy to take questions.
Thank you so much, Director Cassell, for the information. It's a lot to digest. I just wanted to ask members, I see Representative Juergens here. Welcome. And I don't know if we have Representative Frankie, but wanted to give members time to reflect. I know that's a lot of information, but we're also expecting to hear from the federal payroll report information on Friday. So we've been hearing some little bit of, you know, bad news, but we're looking forward to see what that will hold. So members, if you have, I see Lead Hamilton ready to go.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just one simple question. It was one that was brought up by my daughter, actually. And she is a registered nurse, a trauma nurse. She moved to North Carolina. And now she is a travel nurse. And so in North Carolina, Washington, D.C., she said her license is recognized by over 30 different states, but not Minnesota. And with the large nurse shortage that we have in Minnesota, is this something that we could do to where Minnesota could recognize these other licenses to bring nurses into the state?
I think that's a good question, Representative Hamilton. I think you're talking about the agreements that exist in various states. And the state of Minnesota, I think we do have a robust system of producing nurses. We do have an opportunity of bringing back those who are left out. So this is more of how do we get people ready? That's a big question. I don't expect that to get a straightforward answer, but this is something that we need to solve. I know we've had from those who are on the ground, the challenges that they're facing, and how we can recruit more nurses. In fact, it's across the board. It's across the nation. People are struggling. As you talked about travel nurses, so I go to the hospital with my dad, spend some time there. I've seen them in the hospitals caring for those who needed to be, you know, cared for. I can tell you the challenges across the board. They have seen it in many states. And we're looking for ways to address that. I'm sure the Health and Human Services committees are going to be discussing healthcare needs, and we need to figure out the best way forward. I think finding quick solutions of bringing people from other states may not be the long-term solution for the state. I don't know if Commissioner Grobe wanted to add any statement to that.
Thank you, Chair Noren. Representative Hamilton, it's a great question. DEED doesn't license nurses, so I don't know if we're the best person to get into the details here, but I will say just today, we relaunched an RFP to help internationally trained medical professionals more quickly and seamlessly get certified here in Minnesota through some workforce grants that this committee helped put forward last session. So you're right, this is a crisis, and we've got to make sure we get every available skilled person in the industry as fast as possible.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you so much. Welcome, Representative Franke. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Chair Noor. I want to go back. I have a question about the slide, a few slides back, labeled Minnesota Occupations in Demand. And what really struck me was the largest number on there was restaurant cooks. Now, I know, and we all know, that the hospitality industry has been decimated at this point. My question is, it says that now, is this a need right now and then the projected over 10 years, or is the 45.9% the projection over 10 years? I mean, I would just urge everybody to look at that graph once again and just see the disparity in the number of the need in this industry and give some thought to what we're going to do as a committee and as a state to help these businesses. But it was 45.9%, and I believe the 10-year opening projection is 48,448. And I'm wondering if I could just get an explanation on those statistics a little better on the comparison to the other industries on that graph.
Commissioner Grobe.
I might turn to Director Casal for specific data there on wages and demand, but you're right. The hospitality industry, as you well know, Representative Franke, being a restaurant owner yourself, is really struggling.
Chair and Noor.
Go ahead.
Representative, members of the committee. Yes, so the 48,000 is a projection over a 10-year period. With a growth rate of almost 46%, that's a very high growth rate in that particular occupation. And I should have mentioned in my presentation, I don't think I did, that these are sorted from highest demand, and this is the top 20 on that list, so of, 350 occupations. These are very high demand occupations.
Representative Franke.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just a question, Dr. Casal, because it caught my ear that what you said about wage and the graph about wage decline after folks were coming off of UI, and how sort of the other pieces of the graph of we have, 2-to-1 positions being open. So there's great demand for workers. And I'm wondering if you could sort of comment on why we're seeing that and what specific workers are being implicated in that. If folks are coming back from UI, I would assume that their wages would go up. So that was sort of a surprise to me.
Gareth Cassell.
Yes, Representative Noor, Chair Noor, Representative. That is a little bit of a puzzle. This is new research that we're doing, so we're still digging into some of these numbers. We haven't actually published this research yet, but I did want to present it to the committee. My best guess there, we're looking at a total earnings over a three-month period, so over that entire quarter. My best guess there is that hours were slightly lower for these workers than prior to the pandemic, so that there was a little bit more churn. They might not have worked for the entire quarter. They might have come back a little bit into the quarter and not gotten the same number of hours that they would have gotten prior to the pandemic when there was just a little bit less churn happening, fewer people moving in and out of jobs? I'm sorry I don't have a better, more clear answer for you, but this is definitely something that we're still digging into.
Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I appreciate that because, and I appreciate learning more because it's sort of a surprising and startling fact, especially given with the high demand of workers. And I guess sort of related to that, just another question of on your, on the graph that there were the top four positions, or four of the top positions that are where we have open, the highest open positions are places where there are wages that make less than the family wage. And I'm wondering if we've seen wages go up in those places or stay stagnant, or if you have thoughts on that.
There is, yes, sir.
Chair Noor, representative. Yes, in general, these occupations are in those industries that are seeing the highest wage increases. These median wages are from last year, so they don't necessarily represent that that increase, but these are still very low wage jobs, and that's one reason why they're so much in demand, is that they're very hard to fill and retain.
Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just, are these the same jobs where we're seeing, in addition to lower wages, the sort of shift issues that you talked about, as split shifts or part-time work or other things like that make jobs sometimes harder to get your full 40 hours a week?
Well, thank you. Sorry, Chair Noor and Representative Greenman. I can speak to some of these. So the food service workers, the fast food and counter workers, and the cashiers definitely have a lot, very high part-time jobs in those occupations. Home health and personal care aides, very few of those jobs are posted as full-time. Something like 65% of those jobs are posted as part-time opportunities. So that's one reason, and that's really the nature of the work, especially for the home health and personal care aides. That is one reason why those jobs are very hard to fill and retain workers in.
Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I really appreciate that. Thank you.
Representative Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and good to see you again, Commissioner Grove. And I thought the presentation today by the director was really helpful. I think I wanted to ask a couple questions, and Representative Greenman was just asking questions about those part-time positions. And again, being heavily in the hospitality industry myself, I know those part-time positions aren't necessarily the breadwinner of the family. They are secondary jobs. They're jobs to get ahead, and they work really well for the family units because one might get home from work and the other one goes to work for a few hours. So that certainly has been a need that we've seen in the hospitality industry, and why those aren't getting filled is maybe just don't want to get out as much as they were and things like that. My question might be coming back though to the commissioner. When it came to the unemployment chargebacks for employers that we typically had watched before the pandemic, right? When you lay somebody off, they get a reduction in hours, they get some unemployment compensation. During the pandemic, we were not charged for those benefits because of the obvious reasons. I want to know, when is that changing back to our old system? And I recently saw my unemployment listing of employees last quarter, and there was about five or six employees on one of my hotels that I'm like, well, these folks have never lost their job. They've never lost an hour, but they were getting unemployment benefits. There might have been a very short time where they got a reduction in hours, but it really came back quickly. And they're still getting benefits. What I need to know as an employer is, when does that sort of switch back to the employers really having to watch that, so that we're not, keeping people out more, but also if they're getting supplemental income because of unemployment insurance, I need to know when we're not hurting our own workforce supply chain out there, so we get them off of that, so we start appealing this again. When do we sort of get right at the ship here so we can move forward and And if it's soon or if it's been here, is there a way you can communicate this better right now to employers to give them a clear indication of when that changes? Thank you.
Commissioner Grove.
Chair Noor, thank you. And Representative Baker, great question. I know we're going to be talking a lot about unemployment insurance this session, and this is a topic that is of great interest to employers like yourself and to the legislature. I think just briefly here, there's two different kinds of employers in the state. There are reimbursing employers who do pay out when there's someone that they lay off in normal times. And then there's taxed employers who pay a tax in, and when that employee is let go, they benefit from the UI Trust Fund. It's not an additional cost to that employer. I assume as a hospitality owner, you're a tax-paying employer, not a reimbursing employer. The UI system went through a lot of changes over the last 2 years to accommodate the extraordinary job drop-off you saw in Director Casal's charts a moment ago. The legislature and the governor collaborated to ensure that the sort of experience rating or the way in which employers are judged on their hiring behavior was held harmless, that nobody was given a deeper cut given the fact that they let folks go to an unforeseen pandemic. As of September last year, any new policy, any new arrangement, any federal government program, any shift in deeds policies based on the legislators' actions went back to normal. So we are currently in a normal state of an unemployment insurance system. The system works today as it did back in 2019. There's no sort of new policy or new arrangement there. So if there's an employee who is claiming unemployment insurance who you don't believe deserves it, or you think is actually employed by you or was never let go, you need to go into our online platform and let us know that. As with any claim, there's the employer side and the employee's side. And if there's a discrepancy, we have a whole adjudication process to work that through. So I'd deeply encourage you to do that. And we're happy to help you directly on that specific case if we can. So please reach out to our office.
So the folks at the UI, thank you, Commissioner. I think the folks at the UI have done a phenomenal job. And our system is one of the best systems in the country. So I appreciate the work that the UI folks are doing in the state. And hopefully we'll have more conversation on Monday as we talk about UI and get more presentation. And we'll get a roadmap before the end of the day. But I don't see any hands up, but I have got a couple of questions myself. Looking at the data, it looks like if someone gets sick and they're laid off, you know, they're not kind of laid off, but they're missing from work and they don't have any benefits, such as paid family medical leave or any other leave, they're considered completely out of the labor force. Is that something that the system really tracks, or is it completely once you go on an unpaid medical leave, you're dropped from the labor data?
Chair Noor, members of the committee. Okay, that is a good question. To be considered in the labor force, you have to either be employed, working at least 1 hour per week, or, you know, even for a family business could be unpaid, or actively seeking work. So meaning sending out resumes, contacting employers, et cetera, during the week of survey. So people who can't meet that threshold, for example, they're sick, are not considered part of the labor force for that period. So some of the reason that the labor force number dropped during the pandemic is because people were not, they may have been on unemployment insurance, but they were not either employed or actively seeking work at that time. Does that answer your question?
To some extent, Director Casal. So the question is, if someone is on, whether it's paid or unpaid, medical leave, how do we track that data? You know, for example, yes, I'm sick or caring for a newborn baby and my employer pays in one scenario. The other scenario is my employer doesn't pay. Are you considered to be in the labor force, or are you considered completely out of the labor force because you're not in the labor at that point?
Chair Noor, if you are being paid, that means you're on payroll, you would be considered employed. There was a bit of confusion, especially early on in the recession, by people filling out the survey around whether they were employed or not. So if they were under the impression that they were going to be going back to work very soon. They were not looking for work because of that. They may have reported themselves as employed when we would have actually considered them to be out of the labor force because they weren't working and they weren't actively looking for work. So it's kind of a question of whether they are maintaining that relationship or they see themselves as maintaining that relationship with their employer or not. It's a little bit of a definitional issue.
Thank you so much, Director Cassell. I think you've given us a lot of information to figure out where we're headed with some of the challenges and the workforce shortages and how we can really position ourselves as a state, not only from addressing some of the other challenges. I know they're more systemic. Some of it is situational, and we also need to be looking at the outside the box, you know, some of the immigration issues, and so many other things that have been happening. So with that, if there's no any question from members, Commissioner Grove, did you have any closing remarks or Director Cassell?
Well, thank you, Chair Noor. We had come to this hearing prepared to also give you kind of an agency update of how things have gone since we last met. So I think if you are still able to do that, we'd love to shift to that conversation and get through maybe as much of it as we could here. I know you have a 2:30 stop, but we could certainly dive into some of the updates and let members know kind of where Dee's been since we last chatted.
Absolutely, Commissioner Grubb. I think that's the time left for us to discuss where we have been and give us a little bit of a glimpse of where we're going to be going through some of the recommendation coming from the department. Please proceed, Commissioner Grubb.
Great. Well, thank you, Chair Noor and members. I think as my colleague Daryl Denon brings up our slides for this portion of the presentation, I just want to begin again with a note of gratitude. This group of leaders was tremendous in the last legislative session, really collaborating with our friends in the Senate and team here in the governor's office to create a budget that really worked for Minnesota. It was a record high jobs bill that we passed out of this committee last session. And we've been hard at work putting that jobs bill into action across the state. And want to just kind of give you an update on where Deed's been, how those programs have unfolded, and give you a sense for what's to come as well. And I know we'll have a chance to talk about our budget in the coming weeks here ahead too. So if we can pull up those slides, I don't know if I see them yet, but would love to walk through a few details that might be kind of grounding for us as we begin this legislative session. Maybe give us just a minute here. And I don't see the slides. Daryl, I don't know. Do you know other folks see them? Yeah.
No, we
sorry, Bo. Let me try that again.
I saw them for a second and then they
okay.
went poof.
Well, let me do it again. Sorry, folks. It's that first day of committee jitters.
It's a good warm up for the session. So now you're sharing the screen. I can see myself.
Good.
There we go.
Looking good.
Wonderful.
Great. Well, I'm joined by some colleagues today who I'll turn to in a moment, but I wanted to just get us kicked off here with an overview of where we've been. So as we dive in here, let's go to the next slide. Our mission, I think, as everyone here knows, is simply to empower the growth of the Minnesota economy for everyone. We are here to help businesses, workers, nonprofits, organizations across our state help Minnesota's economy grow. And that is really what DEED is oriented to do. And we want to do that rooted in our values. We are an agency that is run really with these six core values that we talk about all the time in our agency: focusing on the customer, communicating early and often, seeking solutions, creating inclusion within our agency and the communities that we serve, encouraging new ideas and innovation in our department, and being gracious. These values, they aren't just words on a paper for us. We celebrate them, reward members of our agency who really exemplify them every year with employee engagement awards. This is really kind of how we think about showing up to Deed every day, and we hope that our customers see that in our work in the communities across Minnesota. So, you know, we run the agency on a goal-driven, metrics-based matter. We have big goals we set for our agency, which I'll talk about in a minute, and we track our progress every quarter. These are rooted in our instructions from the legislature and what we do as an agency, and also how we can run a great agency for the state of Minnesota. So this is a system that many businesses use. Many governments are starting to increasingly use this, of setting big goals, tracking quarterly progresses and scores, setting measurable results to ensure that we're on pace. And it's something that's really given us, I think, a vision for where we want to take BEAD for our state in the coming years. So we're excited to run the agency in that way. And then if you go to the next slide, you'll see some of those goals that that are animating our work this coming year. And these are kind of broad agency-wide goals that that we use that really work across departments. One is just focused on customer service. We want to build a much better workforce development system that's rooted in a proactive approach to meeting workers. We talk about the workforce crisis. We will a lot this session. We have a major focus here on reimagining how we serve job seekers in Minnesota. Second big goal is just to successfully implement all the new economic recovery grant programs that we have at our agency that we've all built out of these committees and that we're out to pursue in the coming weeks and months and years. The third is to sell our state. And we'll talk about this a lot this session. This is a really a critical juncture for Minnesota for us to tell the rest of the world who we are, what we're about, and where we're headed, and to attract more people to come move here and businesses to come grow here. We actually lost 10,000 Minnesotans last year, and we want to market Minnesota in a much more aggressive, proactive way to make sure we are in a very competitive environment telling our story, the story that people need to hear about our state. The fourth is just to collaborate better across workforce and economic development. That's more critical now than ever before. And the last gets back to that culture piece. We want to build a positive culture so we can serve Minnesotans even better. So these are this gives you kind of a sense for how we talk about our work internally at DEED. And then we're going to talk about some of the new initiatives. We've done a lot to put into place the programs and initiatives and dollars that this committee passed last session. We've also done some new things to make sure we're doing that as effectively as possible. The first is a campaign called Good Jobs Now. This is a really proactive, reimagined way for us to reach out to people who aren't working right now in Minnesota, but could be if we can connect them to the right opportunity. So every week we call thousands of Minnesotans who are on our unemployment insurance rolls and we direct them to job opportunities near them. It may sound simple, but this has never been done before in Minnesota. We have been in a model previously where we kind of sat in career force centers and waited for folks to come to us. We believe right now you can't afford to be passive in any way, given the trends that COVID has brought, given the workforce challenges. We got to be aggressive. Our businesses demand it. Our job seekers demand it. So we are on the horn all day long to Minnesotans, matching skills with jobs, hosting a whole host of programs and webinars and activities just to highlight, you know, what's out there. We just spent a month in January on healthcare month, focusing on jobs in that profession. This is a much more assertive posture for our agency and one that we think is really needed. The second is a campaign called Build What Matters. And this is rooted in a new website at joinsmn.com. If you haven't seen it yet, I really encourage you to take a look. This launched late last fall, and it's really meant to be a new front door for Minnesota. You think about Explore Minnesota Tourism, right? That tourism site we have that we market every year that Explore Minnesota Tourism as an agency runs. We've never had that kind of a platform longstanding for Minnesota to tell our story from an economic development standpoint, and we need to. Now is the time. We have to be aggressive in a very disrupted market to get businesses to come and build and grow here and to get people to want to come and move here and to tell our story in a way that's rooted in the fact that this state is at an inflection point on so many fronts, but is also a state that boasts so many advantages and is differentiated in so many ways that has long helped us punch above our weight. We can't take anything for granted. We have to be assertive with our message. And so this site is something you'll hear a lot about from us in the coming months, and that the governor is deeply involved in promoting too, as we really get on a forward-leaning foot after a couple of years of feeling like everyone's reacting to world events around them. We want to be proactive and moving forward. And then just on our culture, I mentioned this before, I'll just be brief here, but we are trying to transform the agency to better serve you, to better serve your constituents. That means having a place people want to work. You know, government faces its own workforce challenges. We want to be the kind of place people want to come and build a career. And what folks are telling us is we're making progress. We've seen our net promoter score. In other words, folks that work at DEED telling other folks to come work there that they like working there improved by 22 points since Governor Walz started. We're proud of that fact. We know we have more work to do. But we want people at the agency to be proud of what we're doing and for that to show up in their work and therefore result in better service. And so from launching an innovation lab to reimagining our DEI work to reimagining how we bring new employees on board, whole host of things here, we think it's making us better. We hope it is. We know Minnesota deserves an agency that's really strong. So those are just some kind of new initiatives that we have. We want to dive next into some program updates. And for this, I'll turn to some of my colleagues. First, I'll bring to the conversation here, if it's okay with you, Chair Noor, Deputy Commissioner Kevin McKinnon, who runs our Economic Development Department. And before I hand it over to him, I just want to show one more slide here, just to give you a sense. You know, this has been an extraordinary period for DEED, unlike any in our history. And the amount of new money that we've had to get out the door, that Kevin and his group and their extraordinary staff have had to move forward every day is astounding. When you look at the last 2 years, we've put forth 9 times more funding towards targeted groups than the previous 2 years. So just an exponential increase in funding towards targeted groups in particular. In the last 2.5 years, we've done the same amount of agreements and dollars deployed as we usually would do in a 6-year time period. So basically in 2 years, we've done 6 years worth of work as it relates to getting money out the door. We are honored to do it. We are excited to do it. The team loves doing it. And I think it's just a helpful kind of rooting in the sense of just how much DEET is moving right now to keep this economy not only afloat, but to write its next chapter. So, Chair Norf, if it's okay with you, I'll turn it over to my colleague, Deputy Commissioner McKinnon, to walk through some of the details of what we've been up to since we last met.
Deputy Commissioner, welcome. Please introduce yourself.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members. Kevin McKinnon, Deputy Commissioner for Economic Development. Just some quick updates on some of the funding that was appropriated to us last year. I'd like to start with the $80 million Economic Revitalization Program. This was, we have developed and implemented the revitalization program and completed round one awards. Basically, this program was aimed at assisting corridors in communities across the state to address and support rebuilding and recovery efforts in affected areas. And organizations basically developed their own programs to serve their corridors, and our grantees are in the process of opening it up. We also launched just recently round two of this program last week. And of the $40 million that is available in this grant round, about $20 million of that has to go to Greater Minnesota to meet our 65-35 split that was actually in the law. Next slide, please. The $70 million COVID relief grants. Many of you hopefully recall that this is the second time we actually have run this program. We learned a lot from the first go round of relief grants and launched a second round last fall and received about 19,000 applications. And we're about halfway through at this point. Essentially, this is a program where we solicit applications from businesses and through a randomized selection process, or basically a lottery, we determine the applicants who will receive $10,000 grants. And of course, they have to demonstrate financial hardship as a result of the pandemic. And so we work through a lot of nonprofits that help us disperse that funding. Also here in the relief grants, in round one, we far exceeded our targeted community grants that were intended to go for specific populations. And we intend to do so again. We also provided another round of funding to our cultural malls, $3 million to lower the cost for their tenants as well. Small business partnership grants. This was a very large increase in funding. We increased our funding for this program by $7 million last year. And this is where we provide funding to organizations for technical assistance to small businesses. And essentially, this is to help them start, stabilize, grow, expand, et cetera. This is really our Main Street business assistance program. And these organizations who work with small businesses do so in the community, and many of them are made up of community members. So we rely a lot on these 37 organizations to serve businesses all across the state. This has been critical assistance over the last few years, and we continue to provide, and they continue to provide, valuable services to the businesses that they do serve. Over half of the funding to organizations that almost exclusively serve BIPOC owners, business owners, and entrepreneurs as well, and many of the organizations that we work with already prioritize that those targeted communities as well. Next slide is broadband. I just wanted to give you all an update on where we are with the $70 million that was passed last year by the legislature. That was $70 million of the $180 million that the state is receiving from the Capital Projects Fund. And as of now, we have our application into the Department of Treasury, the U.S. Department of Treasury. They have not given us approval yet to proceed with a grant round, but once they do, we intend to launch a $35 million border-to-border grant round. And then also we'll do so immediately in July, where another $35 million will be available. This money obviously is on top of a lot of other federal resources that are coming. So we're working very closely on with our providers on the implementation of that. Our Angel Tax Credit Program was funded at $15 million for the biennium, $10 million for this calendar year. This past calendar year, we allocated about $9.8 million of it. This is a tax credit to help facilitate equity investment in technology-based businesses by offering a tax credit to investors in those businesses. As many of you likely know, 50% of that fund is for targeted groups and is available each year until October 1st. We did almost $3.5 million by October 1st this year, and then released the remaining funds to the rest of Minnesota at that point. Launch Minnesota. This was reauthorized last year, this is a program that makes investments in small innovative startup businesses. We have, as of very soon, allocated all of the $1.5 million in grants that we provide to businesses. And also, on the next slide, you'll see our network that we have across the state. We've also allocated these funds, or we'll be in the process of allocating these funds to help our network get set up and provide services to businesses in those regions. And finally, our child care program. This too was an increased appropriation. We normally have about $750,000 for this program. Last year, we were appropriated $5 million and conducted a grant round for the first $2.5 million that was available this fiscal year. And we awarded 14 grants across the state to help communities increase the supply of childcare, which we know remains an issue and remains a barrier to employment across the state. And so we will again open another round of funding in July of 2022 to spend the remaining $2.5 million. It would also not be right if I didn't talk about our relationship with the Minnesota Investment Initiative Foundations across the state, who also received direct appropriations from us. They have been leaders and help us with this issue all across the state. And you can see on the slide the amount of money that each initiative foundation received. So thank you for having me here today.
Thank you so much, Deputy Commissioner McKinnon. Commissioner Grove.
Thank you, Chair Noor. And I assume folks will have questions, and we might be tight on time for them given the stop, but Chair, if you'd like, we can continue with workforce and come back to questions at another time. I want to respect what the committee would like to do.
Please proceed. I think it's the starting point, so we need to get back to our process. Go ahead, Commissioner.
That sounds good. So workforce development, the other major remit of our agency. And again, we're kind of unique. Most states have separate agencies for both these things. We bring them together, which I think is really smart. It connects both sides of that coin. And for this presentation, I'm going to turn over to my colleague, Mark Majors, who's our Director of Employment and Training, and also my colleague, Evan Rowe, who's our Deputy Commissioner for Workforce Services. Before I do that, though, just a quick overview of how much more work DITA has been doing, how much more money we've been getting out the door. Just to put it into perspective, we have issued more than $130 million additional dollars in the last 3 years, more than we would usually issue in workforce development. So we are spending records amount of money. And this is thanks to both the work of this committee appropriating more general funds. It's thanks to the Workforce Development Fund growing, but it's also thanks to applying for and receiving millions and millions of dollars in federal grants as well. We've been very aggressive on that front, trying to get every last workforce dollar into the state because talent has always been one of the secrets to Minnesota's success. And so spending on that through this work helps employers. And we know it's needed so badly. And unemployment insurance, there's so many ways you can look at this, but the simplest is just this. We've almost issued $15 billion during the pandemic in payments to Minnesotans. That's 17 times more than the usual rate we would pay out to Minnesotans in that same period. So just record amount of funding. So grateful to our staff and team at Deed for making that possible. With that, I'll turn to one of our leaders in this space for an update on our workforce development work, Mark Majors, who runs our employment and training division. Mark, over to you.
Director Majors, welcome, and please introduce yourself and proceed.
Good afternoon, Chair Noor, members of the committee. My name is Mark Majors, Director of Employment and Training Programs at Deed. I'm pleased to provide you with an overview of the workforce development efforts since the last legislative session. Since our last session, we've released over 9 RFPs, and we've executed over 30 direct appropriations. As first, I want to talk about the first grant that we provided, is our Pathways to Prosperity, which is one of our signature programs. It's been part of our portfolio in the last 5 to 6 years. And over the years, we made multiple adjustments based on feedback that we received from some of our workforce partners. This year, we implemented something new, which is our Individual Training Pathways Grant. And this is for individuals in low-paying jobs that want to upskill. They can use this ITP to go and take classes and it will enhance their skills so they can move into higher wage jobs. So this year, we let the RFP out this past summer, and we awarded 34 grants worth about $13.5 million. Next slide. Our Youth at Work are grants. This is in one of our signature youth grants. These grants serve at-risk youth between 14 and 24 years old who participate in summer youth and as well as year-round programming. This year, we awarded 40 grants worth about $1.7 million. And we're really excited to have 8 new grantees in this portfolio. As you may know, we've made a big effort to do a lot of community engagement over the last 3 years, and getting new grantees in the portfolio is one of our priorities. So we're glad to have these new 8 grantees, and you can see them on the right-hand side of your screen. Next slide, please. Our Youth Supportive Services. This funding goes to organizations who serve individuals between the ages of 14 and 24 years old who are in training, and they need those additional services while they're in training. So like bus passes, food cards, they may need books, other items they may need so they could be in training. So this year we awarded 13 grantees worth $470,000 worth of grants. Also here, I'm very pleased to say that we actually have 7 new grantees in our portfolio this year. So this notion of doing this community outreach and engagement is benefiting as we get new providers coming into our portfolio. Next slide, please. Our Youth Direct Appropriation. So this funding is provided to further workforce services in the state. There are 13 youth organizations that received direct appropriations worth $5.8 million. And most of those contracts have already been executed. We try to get those grants executed within 45 days after the legislature finishes. Our Southeast Asian and Women Economic Security Act programs. These are both staples in our program. The Southeast Asian program is a grant that provides services that relieve economic disparities in the Southeast Asian communities through workforce services. We've awarded 6 grants worth $1 million per year. So that's $2 million worth of grants. Our Women Economic Security Acts, these grants provide employment and training to prepare women in high demand, high wage, non-traditional jobs. We were fortunate to award 8 grantees, and the grants were approximately $750,000 a year. And we were glad to welcome 3 new organizations to the portfolio. Adult Support Services. Our adult support services, kind of like the youth support services, provide funding to enhance and improve an existing workforce development programs. This year, we awarded 18 grants worth of $475,000, but it's $500,000 once you take our admin out, And we have five new organizations in the portfolio for that. So we're glad to have that. And our direct appropriations for adults, we are using, which are services that use to enhance workforce services. There were 17 organizations that were awarded direct appropriations worth $9.8 million. Next slide, please. I'm really excited about this because I think it goes to a lot of the conversation that was had earlier where Director Cosell was talking about. We have the International Training Professionals, Trained Professionals Program. This provides funding to assist internationally trained professionals in earning the professional license required to do similar work in Minnesota. We originally released that RFP in September. However, we only received a small amount of applicants. Recognizing there's a need to do more, to provide more information about what the grant is about, we've done a great deal of taking steps, and I think Commissioner said it earlier today, earlier in this conversation, that we had a release of information. I will be doing a webinar tomorrow to talk about the grant, and then we'll release a new RFP on February 9th for 45 days, and it will be due back on March 28th. So we're looking forward to getting a lot of our applications. Thank you. Next slide. This is also a new grant for us, is the African Immigrant Community Economic Relief Grant, sort of like the Southeast Asian grant. This is another grant that has a purpose to provide service to relieve economic disparities in the African immigrant community through workforce services. We awarded 8 organization grants worth $1.8 million per year. We have, I believe, 4 new organizations part of our portfolio this year, a part of the overall portfolio for D. Next slide. Targeted community capital grant. This is a big one. It was about $24 million was allocated for capital improvement efforts. $6 million will be moved toward the meat processing plant in South St. Paul. $18 million is for capital improvements in government entities or not-for-profit organizations. We released that RFP. They've come back. We had approximately 150 applications, and it asked for about $175 million. We plan to make announcements towards mid to late March on this grant. Thank you, and I'll turn it over to Assistant Commissioner Evanro.
Assistant Commissioner, welcome. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Chair Noor, members of the committee. I only have one slide, so this should be quick. But we're going to have a much more in-depth discussion on unemployment insurance, I'm sure, later in this session, possibly as soon as next week. But we just wanted to mention a few of the changes that the legislature passed and the governor signed in the previous session that tie into the future of the unemployment insurance program going forward. Just a few of these items are increased flexibility for reemployment assistance training, unemployment eligibility for high school students, and the Social Security benefits offset being removed. Those are all going to go into effect on July 3rd, basically in the new state fiscal year. And then the program has already implemented changes to the shared work plans that allow for greater employer flexibility in that regard, basically reducing the length of the employment requirement. That was a change that was made basically to make the program more flexible, to make that piece of the program a little bit more flexible and usable by employers. So those are just a few of the changes that, from a policy standpoint and eligibility standpoint, that are in process for implementation later this year. We have much more to talk about when it comes to the overall unemployment insurance program in the state, but just wanted to give you a taste of a few things from the policy realm. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Commissioner Grove.
Well, thanks, Chair Noor. That wraps our presentation. Again, just it's our honor to serve the state, to work with all you on how we best do that, and appreciate the chance to talk to you all as we begin the session today. And if there are questions now or in the future, we stand ready to answer them and eager to partner with you all.
Absolutely, Commissioner. We appreciate the work that we collectively did. You know, it's a lot of work that we did. And guess what? We've got a lot of work coming up during this session. Representative Beck.
Thank you very much. And I'll be really quick. Thank you for the presentation. And I have a quick question for maybe Assistant Commissioner McKinnon about broadband. And again, I know we're waiting on some federal language right now, and we are dangerously close to losing our construction season coming up that many of us have heard about around the state. When it comes to broadband, is there anything we can do to leverage our dollars to get RFPs out the door. The broadband office has done a great job around the state to communicate this, and everybody's in a holding queue. But is there anything, Commissioner, we can do to help push the federal decision-making process to get this thing going so we get RFPs out the door here possibly next week so people can get those into your office?
Deputy Commissioner McKinnon.
Mr. Chair, Representative Baker, we have been communicating with Treasury as much as we can in hopes that some decisions will come sooner rather than later, particularly on completing the application and their review of it. We have worked through it. As you know, we're trying to run our border-to-border broadband program with that funding, which there's some tweaks that the Department of Treasury was interested in, and so we've worked through most of that. So at this point, I am quite sure that we are very close to hopefully receiving that approval.
Thank you so much, Representative Baker. Representative Haley.
Thank you, Chair Noor. Nice to see you again. Thank you, Commissioner Grove, and everybody for the presentations. A lot of questions, but I know we don't have a lot of time today. I know we'll be talking about this very frequently during our committee hearings. But one thing that stands out, Commissioner Grove, I love the fact that your agency was making those outbound calls, and that's something very unique, and I appreciate you being innovative there. What are you hearing back from people? We have all these open jobs, and we keep hearing from employers that sometimes job interviews are set up and people don't show. So what are you hearing when you make those calls? What is the gap? Why aren't people taking these jobs?
Commissioner Grove.
Chair Noor, Representative Haley, important question. I would say, first of all, there are a lot of people taking a lot of jobs. We've seen over the last 5 or 6 months in particular, as vaccines have spread further, more and more people moving into the workforce. We've seen on average every month more than 10,000 new jobs in the state. So people are getting back to work. But make no mistake, you're exactly right. At 205,000 job vacancies in Minnesota right now, we're at a record workforce shortage. So this is a major issue. Issues vary by job seeker, but I can say that we've seen the number of people taking weekly benefits from our unemployment insurance drop considerably over the past year, and we're down to, I think, somewhere in the 70 to 60,000 range, where we were at over 700,000 before. Those who we do call now are saying some of the same things I know your constituents are sharing, that they don't have childcare, so they can't get themselves to work. The shift hours don't work for their schedule of their life due to things like childcare shortages. There's still concern out there about Omicron and the virus, and the fact that many folks either take care of a loved one who is compromised or are compromised themselves. And then there are always, like in any labor market, mismatches, right? People that are applying for jobs that aren't getting them, mismatches in skills. So there are all kinds of challenges, but we're seeing all kinds of successes too. We've got to keep at it. We've got to be assertive and aggressive. And I think as we consider what our workforce policies are going to be this session, we got to think about speed. We also got to be thinking about the long term and building the kinds of jobs and the kinds of training. They're going to animate an economy that is much stronger, has much higher paying jobs and much longer term jobs than the one that we had when the pandemic hit. So more to come, but an important discussion.
Representative Hayden.
Oh, thank you, Commissioner. Thank you, Chair Noor.
Lead Hamilton.
Thank you, Chair Noor. Commissioner, we talked about record numbers of dollars that are being invested. In light of the recent news about fraud that was taking place in another program, right, where millions of dollars are allegedly being used not for the original purpose, right? Can you just share with us, give us some comfort of the processes, protocols, internal audits, whatever DEED has to assure that these monies are going to the appropriate people and they're being used the way that they're supposed to be used?
Commissioner Grove.
Chair Noor, Representative Hamilton, it's an important question and one that we think about and care about deeply at the agency. We are audited regularly, like every agency should be, and we welcome that. That's exactly what good governance requires. You know, the area of fraud that is most talked about when you look at DEED is unemployment insurance, right? $15 billion run through our agency. That's a lot of money, did we get it right? And that's a question we ask ourselves all the time. We've implemented some pretty innovative technology solutions to prevent fraud, working with our friends at Minute, whether it be data sharing across agencies to truly verify identities, or proactively scoping out where some of these networks are that would seek to defraud our department are. Compared to other states, we've fared a lot better on that front. And the reality is that in unemployment insurance systems in every state in this country, an always-on version of fraud is there. You always see about 2 to 3% of fraud in any given unemployment insurance system in our country. Many states saw a jump during the pandemic. We did not see a jump in that percentage, but given the numbers, you saw an increased amount of total dollars that were fraudulently obtained, just given the scope and scale of this. So it's something we work on with Minute all the time. As it relates to our grantees, because I think you're referring to another agency who's had a challenge with a grantee, we have a rigorous process with our grantees to follow up and ensure the work is being done that needs to be done. Our department focuses very heavily on that. We take our reputation really seriously, because without it, we're not able to do good work. So more to come on that if you'd like, but that's about as much as I have to share in this time. And thanks for the question.
Thank you so much, Commissioner Grobe. Did you have any follow-up, Lead Hamilton?
No, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Well, thank you. I know we have a lot of things to cover. We have scheduled meetings on Monday to talk about the UI. We have got the frontline workers on the 9th, and we've got other things coming up. But I also wanted to remind you, on the 8th, we will have a joint hearing with the Early Childhood. It's going to be at the University of Minnesota. So I hope you are all ready for the work ahead, and I appreciate all the time. I don't see any further items on the agenda.
Mr. Chair, sorry.
Yeah.
To the joint hearing members, if you are planning on attending in person, can you contact me right away after committee? They need a head count just for spacing on the COVID safe spacing. So please contact me right after the committee. If you're attending in person, there will be a Zoom option.
Do you have any other further updates on the roadmap ahead? Mr. Reese.
Mr. Chair, you covered it pretty good through next week. We do have our two hearings regularly scheduled, and then the Tuesday evening joint hearing with early childhood. So more updates coming, and remain in contact with the members and staff as we go.
And we'll come back to Ashley's introduction during the next meeting. So I just wanted to say with that, we are adjourned. Thank you so much, members and everyone.